You have questions, we have answers. This is Jane Muller.
And this is Ken Muller. Welcome to our show, all about real estate with Ken and Jane. And today, Jane, the questions and answers are going to continue on the landlord-tenant process. To recap, last show, we got into the whole process about why real estate is a very good investment, how it, you know, it typically outperforms the bonds, but maybe not quite as high as stocks, but you have the stability, you have the brick and mortar, you own something,
yes.
It's going to appreciate, hopefully. You're also getting a decent rate of return, which, you know, could be anywhere from maybe 3-4% all the way up to 8 or 9%, or even higher, depending on how risky the area you invest in.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And then we started getting into the whole process that once about, you know, whether for certain investors, when is a good time to buy, hold, and sell. Mm-hmm. And then we left off basically getting into the landlord-tenant process, you know, what the role of a real estate agent is in screening and finding the landlord qualified tenants and doing the credit check, getting the income verification. And also we delve into the fact that, you know, the credit score is usually the one of the deciding factors, but there's always extenuating circumstances where somebody with, you know, not so good credit, there could be a
valid
reason or reasons,
yes.
You know, mm-hmm. a divorce, an ex-girlfriend or wife or vice versa that ran up the spending or just
yeah.
or just some hardship, you know, due to COVID.
Yes,
you mentioned the case last
yes.
week.
Mm-hmm.
So to continue with that, let's go on with the process in the landlord-tenant once in the with continuing off
sure.
with the screening.
Mm-hmm. Once the landlord chose application, right, and we can have a lease signed by the both party, and then the deposit is due. The deposit typically in New Jersey is a maximum month and a half. So the landlord must to deposit the fund in the interest-bearing account.
That's
yeah.
right. Mm-hmm. And one thing we should also qualify in the whole application process, a lot of times what agents do, they might say, well, the tenant has a very low credit score, but they volunteer to prepay 6 months up front.
Yeah.
That's not allowed because basically under the truth in renting, they look at any prepayment as counting, regardless of what you label it as. If you label it as prepayment for rent, they still classify it as going towards a security deposit because it's future money being, it's money being held for future rent, which is like a security. So, and by law, you can only have a month and a half. So the answer to prepayment is it's not allowed. You're not allowed by the laws
yes.
to collect it, and the landlord, you know, you're not supposed to, that's...
Well, I mean, I'm not an attorney here, but I would say seek attorney advice on that. But my understanding is slightly different from you, Ken.
Okay.
My understanding is the landlord cannot demand 6 months or whatever the rent upfront as part of decision making. But the tenant, if they offered, right, they pay the landlord, that's okay. But not because you want to secure, that's one of the reason to choose to you know, to get accepted. For example, remember a long, long time ago when I came to this country, I rent, I always pay my landlord 3-6 months ahead. Why? I'm always travel.
Right.
I'm the person, as you know me, I don't want to be delayed the payment. But on the other hand, I'm not as organized as you are. So I always write a check, you know, 3 months, 6 months up front. But if I do late 1 month, landlord say, Jane, you forgot to write me a check. Oh, I'm sorry, I'll write you another
back
3 months.
They didn't have Zelle.
Yeah.
They didn't have the
yes.
you know, direct, you know, automatic withdrawal. Just
yeah.
all this great new technology
that's right.
came about the last 10, 15 years, which can, you know, make
that's
a lot
make
more
a difference. That was almost 20 years ago. But it's right. The difference, right? But you can, I mean, sometimes, right, I deal with the tenant application, the overseas student, for example, right? The parents cannot, the parents don't want to give the money to the kids. But who knows? You've given the whole year, they could buy a BMW, you know? They want yeah. to make sure it's go to the landlord. They give them pocket money, but they want to make sure it's going to the landlord. So they can't, they overseas, they just want to, you know, pay 6 months or a year, you know, wire transfer, you know, so they know it's done. So there could be different reasons. I feel the tenant, you know, they want to pay up front, it's up to them. You are absolutely right. The landlord cannot, you know, use that as a criteria. It's against the law. You can't say you give me 6 months or a year advance, I will take you. That's absolutely against the law. But but it doesn't prevent it. It doesn't stop the tenant if they want to. I mean, I don't want people misunderstand our messages here and say, oh, now I can't prepay the rent because it's against the law. I don't think so. I mean, it's your money. You want to pay, you pay, right? But the landlord cannot use that as the criteria to be their decision making based on that criteria. That's what it is. So, yeah. Right. And the another questions the tenant sometimes ask, why they want my social number? You know, I don't want to give them social number. But in this case, you know, the landlord must deposit money in the interest bearing account, and it's a trust landlord tenant trust account. So basically, the tenant is entitled of the interest, maybe 10 cents, maybe a dollar. Yeah, so, but the principle is there. Why the New Jersey government want to make sure the landlord have to put the deposit into landlord tenant trust account is in case if a landlord have any financial difficulty or any problem with the landlord, right? This fund is held in a trust independent of the landlord account.
Right. It's considered a savings account, meaning the landlord cannot touch the money. It's dedicated there for the tenant to grow with whatever the interest rate is. And then at the end of the lease term, when the tenant moves out, the landlord has to return that security deposit plus interest minus any itemized deductions for damages back to the tenant within 30 days.
Landlord have 30 days. Because sometimes, I mean, I'm jump ahead a little here. Yeah, and sometimes the tenant expect the landlord to give the deposit back on the spot when they give the key back. And the landlord don't have to because, you know, they have up to 30 days to return the deposit.
And if the tenant vacates the lease early, it's 30 days from the day from the time the tenant vacates. So if the tenant leaves, you know, 2 or 3 months prior to the end of the lease or whatever is agreed, they have 30 days from that time.
Yeah, but you open another can of worms. Okay. If they leave early, is it agreed by landlord? They owe the rent as well, you know.
Right.
Although the deposit cannot be substitute the rent, but they still owe landlord money. That's the truth. That's the, you know, so they have to, you know, figure it out. So, but generally speaking, the deposit maximum is a month and a half, must be deposited in the interest-bearing trust account. The tenant has to provide the social security number, and the W-9 form has to be signed, and that one goes to the bank with the deposit when the landlord opened the account. Yes. Mm-hmm. Right. Another question I often have either, you know, from the tenant agent or tenant applicants is they have a pet. You know, what happened? Most landlord request no pet policy. And sometimes it's because the association, you know, so she's not like a Cross Point in East Brunswick, there's no pet from the association. Sometimes it's the landlord feel, you know, they may be disturbing of the neighbor or damage the property. But as you know, it is case by case.
And then there are also certain exceptions to the no pet policy, like if it's a service dog, there are certain things that override that.
Yes.
Because if the tenant has a legitimate service dog or you can get into the emotional support, that's almost a topic in and of itself,
which requires
a lot of discussion. But those are some exceptions carved out for the no pet policy.
Yeah.
For people with disabilities as well.
Yep. In the past, I see some agent on the tenant application offered the landlord extra, extra rent, or they said, can I pay $500 a pet deposit? Answer is no, because we just discussed, right? Deposit maximum is month and a half. So you already existing that that's against law. You cannot take any additional deposit, pet deposit. Doesn't matter what label, you know, you're not allowed. However, if the tenant applicant offer extra rent, that's a different story. You know, they can, I think people offer maybe $50 extra a month you know, to have the pet, sometimes the landlord will allow.
Well, I think in this market being as competitive as it is, we've been seeing it with the rental market as well, that people are bidding over asking for the rental prices, which was
unusual.
This year, last year, you never saw that with rentals. If the asking price was like $3,000 a month, you get bids at like coming in maybe $2,700 to, you know, $3,000, but you never would see like going over unless there were some extenuating circumstances. Now you're seeing it as a strategy for a lot of agents are using to try to have their tenant, you know, secure the property.
Yeah, I saw some other tenant just as a buyer, right? They have a strategy to win the property. I saw a lot of some of the rent tenant application plus the agent strategy is to offer landlord the warranty. In the past, I saw the landlord offer a tenant. Right. Now this is the opposite. They offer landlord the warranty itself. Price is reasonable. It's like anywhere between $500 to $800.
And we should explain what that is for the listeners. The warranty would basically be where the tenant is offering as part of paying their rent. In addition to paying their agreed upon rent, they're willing to take out a home warranty plan to cover the HVAC, the
appliances,
washer, dryer, stove, oven, whatever, you know, so the landlord would have peace of mind that if any appliances break during the term, it's fully covered by the
tenant warranty. So the landlord can be, as you said, you know, everything's covered. They do charge a visit fee, but tenant normally in the agreement said they're going to cover up to 100 or even a little bit more to cover. But the typical visit fee from this kind of is about between 100 to 150, you know, depends which company you choose from. So some tenant offer that to the landlord. So the landlord can be sure the day the tenant move in, pretty much, you know, worry-free. You know, because anything they will be taken care by the warranty itself. That particular warranty is a little different from PNG worry-free. PNG worry-free is if anything broke, right, they come and fix it. But if they cannot fix it,
they don't cover the replacement.
They don't cover. It happened to one of our property, right?
Yeah.
We had the PNG warranty that was a AC. They came in, they put in Freon, they still charge us Freon.
Well, yeah, PSAG. So that's why it's so important with any of the warranty provisions, you have to really ask the customer rep what's covered, what's excluded, because a lot of these, like the PSAG, for example, if it's in there, some of the parts may not be included, and or sometimes they say, well, even though we could fix it, we really don't want to fix it, so you're going to have to get a new one. That happened with the stove.
That happened to us, the AC. So after twice, right, we paid Freon the first time, we paid Freon the second time, and the third time, they call them. They say, no, you better get a new one. So we have to. If we do that, we will buy the new one the first time, right? So with this type of new warranty we just mentioned, if it can't be fixed, the warranty company will replace it at no cost.
Right. That's why with any warranty program, know the provisions, and a replacement is very critical to know if that's covered or not, because that could be a very disappointing thing when you go to call the company and they find out, they say, sorry, you know, we can't fix it, and then you're.
You have to read the fine print.
Right. All right. Why don't we take a short break, and we'll be right back after these messages.
A state-of-the-art building, approximately 3,000 square feet with a backup generator and plenty of parking, is available for lease. Located on the main thoroughfare in Hamilton Township, the building is zoned highway commercial and is suitable for retail, medical, office, education, and much more. To find out more and see if it fits your business and your needs, contact Ken at 908-337-9448. That's Ken at 908-337-9448. A two-story building, approximately 5,100 square feet, with private offices and open spaces located in prime downtown New Brunswick, is available for lease. Yes, come on down and take a look. The building is zoned community commercial and has many permitted uses, including office, art gallery, theater, and music studio. To learn more about this property and more, contact Ken at 908-337-9448. That's Ken at 908-337-9448. Attention to developers and contractors. Over 3 acres of land located at the heart of East Brunswick is up for sale. Great location and lots of potential. For further details, please contact Ken at 908-337-9448. You are listening to All About Real Estate with Ken and Jay Muller on 93.5 FM, 1450 AM. Fox Sports New Jersey. Now let's get back to the show.
Okay, welcome back, Jane. Let's continue on the discussion on the landlord-tenant screening process. So we covered basically selecting the tenant, getting them some of the lease provisions, you know, the security deposit, the lack, you can't have a pet deposit, you know, how during this competitive market, tenants are paying over asking rent. They're also throwing in, you know, certain things like willing to cover the warranty program. So let's talk about what happens, you know, typically once the tenant is selected, the lease is fully signed, the landlord's got the security deposit. Typically, they get the security deposit along with the first month rent up front, which you're allowed to do. So you're allowed up front to have 1-2.5 months rent, which
in
is
total.
Which is 1 month for the first month rent and then 1.5 months for the security deposit.
Absolutely. As a landlord agent myself, the first thing, as soon as the lease is signed, I would suggest landlord to get the CCO or fire. It really depends on individual township. Some township only need a fire inspection. Some need a certificate of occupancy. So it's township by township.
Right. And some towns, sorry to interrupt, but some townships like North Brunswick, they actually have a rental department that does
yes.
that every time there's a change in occupancy in the renter, the township has a special department. They do a rental reinspection to make sure that everything is up to their standards. And, you know, they wouldn't necessarily block the occupancy, but there's certain things they might say, hey, you have a punch list of these items you've got to get fixed, you know, within.
They may delay the move-in date.
They could delay the move-in date, but typically what happens is they'll come back for a reinspection and give the landlord a reasonable amount of time to get fixed what is on their list.
But once again, the key is, right, for any landlord out there, you have to check with the township, you know, at the beginning. You have to check with township as soon as, you know, you own a property or even before you own a property. This could be part of a decision making, right? And you have to understand and the township requirement. And it can be changed from time to time. Always good to call every time you change a tenant. For example, right, in Edison, typically, right, in the past, when I was very active, you know, represented a tenant that time. So sometimes, even though there's a punch list, the tenant allowed to move in, the tenant will have to sign that paperwork, knowing, you know, the landlord has to fix this per the township requirement. But a certain other town, like Old Bridge used to be, right, you can't. You have to fix it, get a re-inspection, and then the tenant can move in. So every township is different. I mean, I don't know now. I'm talking about this is about 3-5 years ago at least. But during the COVID, the township may change their rules.
Right.
You have to check for the updated.
And we should distinguish between the CCO requirement, which the townships, you know, may have, and also their own internal inspections. But also with the fire inspection, that's something that must be up to
code.
They will not make an exception. If you don't have the working smoke detectors, the carbon monoxide, if you don't have the fire certificate
You
cannot move in. That's something.
Absolutely. That's a safety.
Or likewise, if the township requires a CCO, or if they don't give you that or give you a temporary CO.
Each township are different.
Different, right.
With a fire certificate, there's a whole New Jersey, the same rule. But with a CCO, some township can give temporary,
some don't.
So you have to check with township. And one more thing I feel is most important is the landlord must register tenant with the township. And once again, township to township have different rules. Some township registered good for a few years until next tenant move in. Some township is good for 5 years, and regardless, you have a change tenant. Some township is on annually. So check with your township.
But by the New Jersey regulations, as summarized in the Truth in Renting, which is a great document that every landlord, every
tenant should read.
Must read.
Yeah.
That basically says every landlord, they have to do what's called the Landlord Identity Registration Statement, which states the recorded names of the owners, the registered agent, if there's any mortgages on the property, if there's a property manager. So that has to be signed and then filed with the clerk. And it's a good idea the landlord must give a copy of that to the tenant as well. And it's a good idea. What we typically do with our clients is we make two copies. We give one to the town clerk and then we have them stamp a copy. So you have proof that you actually submitted that because that's something that is required and that could be a grounds for if you have a legal issue with the tenant and the landlord didn't comply with that, that's grounds for the to throw out your case.
Yes. And also, I mean, if neighbor complain or something, that's all come to. But basic thing is obey the rules, obey the laws.
Yeah.
If you stay within the rules and laws and you're protected, you can sleep well at night. Yeah. So that's very...
Okay, let's move on. So getting to the lease. Okay, the lease is agreed. All the paperwork is done. What do you typically, as a realtor, do you typically just give the keys to the tenant and just say, go move in, have a, you know, good luck with everything? Or do you do, isn't a good idea to do pre-move-in walkthrough?
For us, we always, a smaller team, we always, for us, the service. We want to protect, you know, both party. It's not, even though I may be only the landlord agent, but my job is to protect both party to make sure we're on the same page. So we always do the walkthrough with the tenant. So we have a walkthrough sheet signed by the tenant. So if there's anything, you know, if there's a mark on the wall, you note it. So when the tenant move out, there's no question, you know, no concerns on either party. So we always have a walkthrough. And Ken, I have to thank you. You're so detailed. You always put there, if it's the condo townhouse, the parking number, the post box number.
The mailbox number, the parking number. You want to have, if you want to have a little contact information for the landlord, the tenant, if there's a co-signer, have everybody's telephone number. So usually the walkthroughs are done by the agents, the realtors on both sides, as well as the tenant, and sometimes the landlord will come. We encourage the landlords to come. It's a good idea to meet the person. You know, everybody's human, and you know, you want to have a relationship, you know, hopefully a positive relationship with your tenant. And I found a lot of times, even though we represent the landlords, a lot of times when the tenants, they do the walkthroughs, a lot of the things they're putting down are not that they're being unreasonable, that they want the landlord to fix. They just want it noted and documented so they're not blamed for something that's pre-existing.
Absolutely. That's 100%. You know, walkthrough. I mean, I have to say, since you create this document, I save me a lot of phone call late at night. It used to be I get a phone call at 9 o'clock, the tenant move in and came back. They forgot their parking number. They called me. I don't know. I have to go back. That time.
Yeah. We've improved the walkthrough sheet, but before I couldn't believe how you did it, because when I finally got into the rental management, I said, well, this is crazy. Every time, what's the mailbox? I have to check an email from you and find for that property and then try to find it or then call up. And it's like I said, we should just have a walkthrough sheet, document the parking number, document the mailbox number. Yeah. And then scan it in the Google Drive, wherever you keep your files, and then
send to both party.
Keep reinventing the wheel and spending hours and hours. You know, the landlord's like, I don't know. I haven't lived there for 8 years.
I never leave there. How's that sound? I don't know. Ask Jake. Yeah. I don't know.
So some things are just called streamlining, just making your operations more efficient. You know,
make ourselves more efficient, the benefit not only to us is to the tenant and the landlord, the service, right? They feel much more smooth and much more easy, right? I mean, 9:30 at night, you in the parking lot, you can't remember what's your parking number, and you could just use your phone, go to the Gmail or email address, and Google it, and just say, hey, you know, I mean, the final walkthrough sheet, and then I will put up the document. Everything's in there. Right.
So also that's having the contact numbers. Yeah. A lot of times we have 100 some properties that you manage for clients. And a lot of times they might say, oh, we have a problem with the tenant. But part of it is being organized. So, you know, sometimes it's not the problem that's the most challenging, but it's finding the information in a timely manner. Contact. Exactly.
Yeah. In a timely manner. That a lot of things can be fixed via phone call. But, to get them. But I have to say, give you that. And you are very organized. And I'm the person. You're always amazed how I can remember everything. I'm getting old now, so I can't. So I better write it down. So once the pre-moving walkthrough, and then the tenant can arrange to move in. So
And one thing that is also allowed, we should talk about the leases. We didn't cover this point. The laws in New Jersey, the DCA, the Truth in Renting, specifically allows landlords to put in that they require the tenants to have rental insurance.
Yes,
that's something that they can require. And oftentimes it's a good idea. A lot of our clients, landlords required, a lot of associations required for the tenants too. So
yes, I had a unique case many, many years ago.
And we should actually probably tell the listeners what renter's insurance is. Basically insurance for the tenant's personal contents. So if something happens, if there's a flood or a roof leak and their TV, their stereo, their computer gets damaged, the renter's insurance policy would protect the tenant's personal contents.
Mm-hmm. And nowadays, we require all tenants to must have a tenant insurance as a part of the application requirement. But many, many years ago, I mean, we learned from our mistake, right? Many, many years ago, and I had a tenant apply, and they said they really have no money to buy the insurance and they don't think it's a need for it. So at that point, and I think the landlord agreed to ask the tenant to write a waiver, just say in case anything happened, they hold the landlord and the agent, you know, harmless mm-hmm. from this. We advise you, we tell you you must have it, but you decided not to have it. So that was many years ago. So at the end, the tenant signed it. And in that particular case, I think that time the association didn't require yet. But later on, all the association, all the association we work with, they require the tenant insurance now, right?
Oh, and speaking of it, while we're on the paperwork, the leases, a lot of times if you're an owner and you belong to an association, often most times the association requires a copy of the lease. They might require a registration
application
statement.
Fee.
There might be a fee associated. So it's important to know the rules and regulations. The associations typically oftentimes have their own addendum that in addition to the realtor lease, and you need to have the tenant and landlord sign off on the association addendum.
Absolutely. I mean, you have to check with the association before you purchase the property, right? And you have to make sure you understand. And if you own the property, check with them every time you tend to move out, because the rules can be different. The application fee and how many swimming pool passes and, you know, do you have to pay the additional? And all these details, right, have better check with associations. Very important. Going back to the insurance story I was, shared a few minutes ago. And at the end, right, there was a newer property. So they signed a waiver. And in the middle of the night, the upstairs, the hot water heater just suddenly mm-hmm. gave it in. All the water came down. So, you know, and the TV, everything ruined. So at that point, the tenant understood why the landlord and the agents highly recommend want her to take insurance, even though she thinks not needed, she can't afford it. And compared with the damage, she lost the TV, lost a few personal mm-hmm. belongings.
Thousands of dollars. Yeah.
Yeah, so at the end, I mean, after that, we learned from it too. After that, we make sure. Plus now, as you mentioned earlier, all association required anyway. So now all our rental, we represent the landlord 100%. They have to provide tenant insurance before they can
get the key.
Yeah, that's a part of the procedure now. It's protect the tenant, you know. I mean, you think it never happened, you never know. So we want to make sure, you know, you get protected from that. Yes.
Absolutely right. It could be a hot water tank. It could be even a toilet. We had a real situation a few months ago where an above unit toilet overflowed and it was running for maybe less than 24 hours, but it caused extensive damage to the unit below. Talking thousands of dollars. All the wall had to come out.
The personal belonging. I'm talking about the tenant, right? If that just happened to be in your study room below, right? And then just happened to be you have a very expensive equipment like a PC and a camera or any, you know, that
any
could be. That's going to be
disastrous. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jane, we're out of time. It's going so quick. We have to continue the next show and get more into the whole finish up the landlord-tenant process. So until then, we'll see you next week. Have a great weekend.
Have a great weekend.
You have been listening to All About Real Estate with Ken and Jane Muller, airing every Sunday at 10 a.m. on 93.5 FM, 1450 AM, Fox Sports, New Jersey. For feedback and suggestions for future topics, go to their Facebook page, All About Real Estate with Ken and Jane, or email them at realestatewithkenandjane@gmail.com or call 732-898-2266.